Numbers 13. We're going to pick back up where we were Sunday morning and develop that some more. Amen. All right. Let's go to the Lord in a word of prayer and just kind of begin to flush everything. We want to get detoxed tonight. I had to, on Wednesday when we come in on two wheels, it's we've got like a million things rolling through our mind, whether it's business or the day or whatever. So we really need a mind shift. We don't need to be carnally minded, which is not necessarily sinfully minded, but it's naturally minded. But check into the spirit man and enter into that dimension. So let's go to that place tonight. I pray for tonight be a refreshing over everybody. I told the Lord in there a while ago, I said, you know how ball players are after they've played a game or something like that, they need an ice bath. And it kind of shocks your muscles and all of that. I told the Lord, I said, I need a spiritual ice bath tonight. So that's what I'm looking for. So let's just go in. Tammy, you got? All right, we'll do it. All right, y'all ready to dive in? Amen. Brother Brett, you want to lead us in that? All right, Numbers 13. last Wednesday night after Bible study, Jeremy and I were talking, and he made mention of something, and the context of what we were talking about kind of got blurred when he said this, because it just leapt in my spirit, and God immediately, on the heels of where we've been, God's immediately started speaking to me, and Jeremy just made mention of the phrase, the grapes of Eshkol. And when he made mention of that phrase, the grapes of Eshkol, something just began to stir in me and jump in me. And the Lord started speaking to me over the course of the next few days and began to chasten me somewhat and began to explain to me, I believe, one of the, I don't want to say a roadblock, but one of the missing pieces of a revival in our lives, singularly and corporately. We come in and I don't know about you guys, but I really, in 2016, have really seen God stirring and moving in a mighty way. In a corporate level here at Victory, it's been good. On a national scale, we made two trips out to California to Bethel events, and they were just powerful, amazing, gathered with people from around the world at both events, and heard testimony and stories of what God's doing, and just have witnessed that firsthand. Made several trips up to South Carolina to the revivals up in South Carolina, and experienced some really, really good strong moves of God. And even in the midst of that, it's almost like there's something missing, an ingredient that's missing in my life sometimes, and in our corporate body here at Victory sometimes. And even when I go to some of these other things that I go, it's you know, you can experience and see these great moves of God, but it's just like there's just, you know, one little thing, and all of these ingredients come together to make it great. All of these ingredients come together to make it exactly what God wanted it to be. And what we tend to do is we tend to come in and we settle for good. We settle for it's better than it used to be. We settle for good church services. We settle for good worship instead of saying, you know, I really want to take it on up and step into the next dimension and the next level. And that's what I really just long for. And I'm in and out of that sometimes, but I, you know, when I hit these good places, I just really long that, God, I want to go to these places that I've never been before. I want to maintain and stay in these places instead of just visiting these places. And it's extremely challenging because we live in a very real world. You know, we got to punch a time clock. Our kids have activities. Our grandkids have activities and all that stuff. So it makes it extremely challenging for us. And so we get real frustrated in these things. And so God began to speak to me about one of the he began to describe of one of the things that is missing from our corporate body here at Victory and so often in my life, and it was the grapes of Eshkol. The story in this is the children of Israel have just been delivered from Egypt. Everybody knows the story of Moses and the Ten Commandments and Charlton Heston and all of that stuff. Everybody's seen that movie when we were kids. You know, it would come out once a year when I was a kid, and when it came out, you didn't miss it. You know, you sit there glued to that thing, and you're like, ah. You know, you don't have all the crazy movies and all that stuff like you do now. And it was, you know, just kind of mind-blowing and all that stuff, you know, just with the whole special effects and all that. And it was probably made in the 60s. But anyway, everybody's familiar with the story. Well, God brought the children of Israel. They'd spent 400 years in Egypt. You know, one thing that I've heard Brother Damon say this, and I totally agree and bear witness with this, is, you know, and scripturally it bears out. Egypt started out as a place of deliverance for the children of Israel. When there was famine, Joseph was in Egypt, the brothers went, and it was a place of deliverance. It was a place where God met their needs and provided for them and all of that stuff. But if we stay too long in that place, it can eventually become a place of bondage. And that's what happened with the children of Israel. And anytime we get in a place where we can get sucked into a place of complacency, I mean, the children of Israel had such a mindset and slave mindset that even after God delivered them in the book of Exodus and Deuteronomy and Leviticus and Numbers, and things didn't go exactly like they wanted, they said, well, I wish I was back in Egypt. They wanted to fall back into that place of familiarity. And so that is something that we have to allow God to shake loose in us, is that we don't stay in a place. And I'm not talking about geographically, although it can be geographically. Typically, it's not geographically. Typically, it is a place of mindset, it is a place of settling, it is a place of where we come in and we're like, you know what, this is good enough. It's like the 1.5 tribes we make mention of that didn't go into the promised land. They stayed on the other side of the Jordan River. And as we talked about last Wednesday night, or Sunday morning, the grass was just as good. The grazing was just as good on both sides of the river. But the separation of the difference in the two was the Ark of the Covenant, the presence of God, was on one side and it wasn't on the other. And we almost get into a thing where it's like, not almost, but we do, and we see it in so much of our churches, mainstream churches in America today, is we come in and it's like we just want to have it the way we're used to and the way we like it and all of that, and we're really not concerned if the presence is here, and sometimes we don't even want the presence here because he messes everything up, right? Let's be honest, sometimes you don't want to press into these deep places, God, because you're afraid what's going to happen. We're afraid to say yes, and we're going to go there in a minute in Matthew 8 and Luke 9. We're afraid to say yes. We'll say yes to revival, but not yes to the moment. We'll say yes to God, but the addendum on the end of that will be, but not now. I'll say yes to you, but I'll loop back around this thing because I don't want my life, and it may be in a thing where, here's what happens to us sometimes. Y'all ever feel like the little hamster on the wheel running? But you're afraid to get off of it because you know you're going to face plant if you try to get off of it, right? You know, how do I get off this wheel? I don't like this wheel, but I'm afraid if I get off, I'm going to crash and burn, Todd, because it's not an easy thing to get off this wheel. And I know I got to get back on it because I got to get back in the rat race of my life, so I might as well just stay on it. And that's what we do, and that's what we settle for. Can anybody relate to that besides me? And so we come in this, and the children of Israel are coming in. I just say all that to set this up. The children of Israel have made this journey from Mount Sinai, out of Egypt to Mount Sinai, where Moses got the Ten Commandments. They met God there. They come down and they go to they come to this place at Kadesh Barnea, and it is at the crossing over place into the Promised Land. And God says, "Okay, we're here, and we're at this place of entering into everything that I promised you, everything that you hoped this would be." Think about your Christian life. Think about all of the great, glorious things that you've, sermons you've heard preached, messages you've heard, everything that you've visualized in your mind of what abundant life looks like. I'm not talking about heaven, but what does abundant life look like? And so we come and we get this thing in our mind, and God says, okay, it's right there across the river. And they come in and they're about to enter into this place, and God said, not only is this a place you're going to visit, but this is a place you're going to dwell in. This is a place I've prepared for you. And he said, so he gets to this place, and he said, but before we go in, though, he said, I want you to send spies in. Now, you've got this setting right before you, and God says, before we go there corporately, you know what I want you to do? I want you to send spies in. Because God said, this isn't the thing when God asked Adam, where are you? It wasn't so God could find him, right? God said, I want you to send spies into the Promised Land to see what's there. God knew what was there. This wasn't information purposes for God so he could figure out a strategy. All right? God does not need information purposes to figure out a strategy for your life. We think we got to come in and we got to fill in all the lines for God and say, God, you really don't understand. Let me explain all this. And God said, I already see all of that. Okay? I am past, present, and future. I am all-encompassing. So I don't need you to come in and try to explain everything to me and throw out all your preemptive excuses, you know, of why this can't work or why it's got to work the way, because we want to slant God in our way. We want to slant God into doing stuff that we really want to do, okay? And so this was not for information purposes for God. This was for the children of Israel. And God began to speak to me after Wednesday night when Jeremy and I were talking. And God said, the grapes of Eshkol is what is missing in your life. It's what's missing in the congregation. And I'm like, all right, God, you know, you got me. You hooked me. Now start developing this and explain this to me. And so he started carrying me down this journey. And so I want to read this scripture. And then I want us to develop and just discuss this some, and then we're going to kick over into Matthew 8, Luke 9, possibly Revelation, and talk about some of that stuff. Numbers 13, is everybody there? Numbers 13, all right. Here we go, verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, now, who sent the spies in? This was not a lack of faith thing by Moses. This was a God thing that I want to show you what's there. Because I want to hook you. And this is God's hook, guys. This is God coming in and saying, I want to show you how amazing I am because I want to hook you. I'm going to show you how amazing this land is because I want to hook you. I want to show you how amazing peace is. God lets us experience these things and see these things and go to these places and bring this back because He wants to hook us into relation. He wants to ruin us for everything else. He wants to absolutely ruin you for everything else. And once you've really tasted, once you've really seen, once you've really experienced, you'll be ruined for everything else. You might not continue to chase after God, but you'll always be unfulfilled. I personally know a lot of people that have walked in great places with God, and they're no longer serving God. And I look at them, and I talk to them, and I spend a little bit of time around them, and you know what? Every one of them, without exception, is frustrated and miserable. Every one. And some of you have lived there. Some of you, that's some of you guys. Y'all have had seasons when you weren't connected with God and you weren't chasing after God. And once you've tasted and seen and known, you're going to be miserable unless you're back in that place. You will. You'll be miserable unless you're back in that place. And so God's idea was to send the spies. This wasn't man's idea. He said, send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers, say you send a man, every one a ruler among them. Now, God sent specific people to spy the land. He sent specific people to have access to see what the land held and to bring stuff back from the land. He said, I'm sending rulers in here. They were young men, but they were men that were, they were leaders. Now, a lot of times we'll come in and we'll say, well, you know, that's for the people that are a lot more spiritual than me. That's for the, you start filling in the blanks, whoever, you know, the Dutch Sheets, the Rick Joiners, the Lou Engels, the all of these people. Heidi Bakers and all that. That's for those, that's for the John the Revelator. God carries those special people to special places, and I'm not just one of those. I'm just not one of those people. You know what qualifies you and makes you special to go there? The places that you sit in right now. By comparison to the majority of the people on this planet, you have experienced more of God. You've experienced deeper things of God than probably 95% of the people on this planet. Every one of you sitting in this room. I want to make that statement again. By comparison, everybody sitting in this room has experienced good, powerful, deep, penetrating things of God that 95% of this planet has not had the opportunity to experience. There are millions of people that are Christians that sit in dead ritualistic churches week after week after week and never experience what you'll experience on one Sunday. And I'm not talking about just here. I could make that exact same statement down at Church of God in Bremen down here. Covenant Life. I could make that same statement to that body down there and it would be accurate. I could make that same statement to Mount Holly and it would be accurate. Because there are Christians, and I'm talking about in Christendom. I'm not just talking about, there are people that said, I have led Catholics to the Lord that knew absolutely nothing about the righteousness of Christ. You start talking and coming in and talking, I've sat and talked with them about the unrighteousness of man and the righteousness of Christ and the need for blood atonement, and they grew up in Catholic church their whole life, and it was a foreign concept to them. And I'm not dogging, there's some charismatic renewal that's happening in some Catholic churches today. I'm not lumping everybody in that. But I'm saying that everybody said, you guys that sit in here on Wednesday night, And y'all go to some other churches on Sunday morning. Y'all sit in some good stuff. Y'all experience heaven. You experience the kingdom. You experience God. God pours His Spirit out upon you, and you have the opportunity to receive that and see that and experience that. So that puts you in a place where God has given you a position where He's calling you and sending you and asking you to come up here into this promised land, not just so you can go and see and experience stuff, so you can bring stuff back. And what is missing, I feel like, in the church right now, in the middle of the first fruit, I believe this is the first fruits of revival. I really do. I believe we are in the first fruits of revival right now, globally. I believe we're on the brink of God pouring something out huge. Something huge, huge, huge. He's doing it, but it's first fruits right now. I think this thing's going to get bigger, and it's going to have more weight behind it. It's going to have more volume behind it. And we're sitting on the front, on the cusp of this thing. And I think the thing that is missing, it is we are sitting back passively waiting for God, and in our mind and in our spirit saying, send it on down, send it on down, send it on down. God, we're waiting for revival. And He's saying, before I send everybody in, you know what I want you to do? I want a certain group of people to go in, spend time in this land, search it out, investigate it, see it, bring back a report, bring back fruit, show the people, let them partake of the fruit that you went and got and brought back. And that's going to stir the people's hearts so much that everybody's going to want to go in. And we're sitting back waiting for this big wind of heaven just to blow over humanity right here. And I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is when people start going up and they start reaching up into heaven and they start ascending into heaven. I get Mark Wilburn in here and do some teaching, blow your mind, stretch you real bad. Ooh, it stretches me, and I'm like, son, I'm going to have to scratch my, I'm going to scratch my head, Lord, scratch my head on that. I don't know about that stuff, you know. But God wants us, God has positioned us, and God has given us invitation to go into the promised land and spend time there and experience Him, experience what He has for us, and to take that fruit and bring it back and show the world and say, this is what God has for us as a people. Not me. Because what we'll do is we'll bring it back and we'll say, look what I got. And we'll conquer it like a trophy. You go in my house and you got deer heads everywhere and elk heads and ducks and all that stuff, you know, mounted on the wall. Kind of looks like a taxidermy place when you come in certain areas of my house and everything. But you come in there, and that's what we do is we'll go up into this deep place and we'll come back and that's our trophy that we got, instead of bringing it back and saying, try some of this. This is what God's got for you. This is what God's got for us. And so I look and I see this, and God sent them, and He sent leaders. And the reason that I wanted to spend a little bit more time on verse 2 is because what you will tend to do as a lay member in a church is you'll tend to be passive and sit back and say, boy, I hope Kenny goes up there and brings back some good fruit for us. I hope Linda's had a good week in the Lord because I need some good fresh worship. I hope Sonny's doing good this week because I need a sound released over me. I need an ice bath. I hope Brent's been digging in the Word and get some. I can't wait because he gets good revelation. I didn't say insight. I've quit saying that over you two guys. We deeper than that now. But revelation. But we see, that's what we do. That's our flaw. That's our fault. Is we'll sit back and we'll say, God, I hope these leaders, whoever we deem a leader, you know, whoever your favorite person is that you like to read or that you like to listen to, or the leaders that are in your life, and we'll come in and we'll say, boy, I hope they're going there. I hope they're going there. And the reason I want to spend time on verse 2 is to put the onus of responsibility on you because of where you've sit. What does the Word say? He who is given much, much is required. Right? What's He talking about in that? Why is He making a statement like that? He who is given much, much is required. Is it talking about material blessings? Is it talking about that? Well, yeah. But it goes a lot deeper than that. The deeper I go with God and the things of God, the more that God shows me, then all of a sudden that puts a requirement, a mandate on my life that I'm supposed to come back and I'm supposed to tell the... You know, there may be some things that God shut... You know, the Apostle Paul said, there's some things I can't tell. I can't tell yet. There's some stuff that... I'm shut up. I can't even talk about that. It's so... And there's some things that I want... Maybe they're too much for her at this point. not for her. Or maybe this moment. But what we'll do is we'll use that as a catch net for everything and say, well, just send them on up. Well, that's just not me. That's not my personality. That's not this. You know what puts that mandate and that onus on you? The places that you've been in. You'd be better off. You'd be better off to get saved and get killed in a car wreck the day after you get saved and get called on up into heaven than you have taste of goodness and the powerful things of God and never walk in those things and release those things in the body. You hear me? I believe that. I believe that. It's not a choice if I'm going to chase after him or not. You say, it's always human choice. I'd be the most miserable person on the planet if I wasn't trying to chase after God. You would too, Brett House. If you weren't, try quit preaching the gospel. See how that works out for you. See how your life is. See what kind of peace you have when you lay your head down at night. See what kind of joy you have when you hold your children. See what kind of joy you have when you hold your grandchildren. Because God put a mantle on you, brother. I can say the same thing about Jeremy Crane. You try quitting. Try. See how it works out for you. See how much peace, joy, hope you have. See how much pleasure and blessing you have of God on your life. God done carried you to too deep of places, brother. He done too much in your life. Too much. And it's not just because you're called to preach, man. There's a mantle on you. There's a mantle on you. God's giving you insight into His heart and giving you certain levels of insight into His mind. And with that comes a tremendous privilege, but it's also a tremendous responsibility. Brandon, I don't care about circumstances, right? I do. I care about circumstances. I care about the circumstances. But you know what? God's done got you in a place in the last. How long you been locked in over here, brother? A year? God's done learned you. You try to go back out in the world and go running in the world. See how good that is for you. You will be most miserable individual. Most miserable. Even if you think you're trying to do some things right. He came to Saul of Tarsus. He said, Saul, why are you kicking against the prick, son? He's like, I'm serving Yahweh. And he said, no, I'm Jesus. You're persecuting me. This is a hard road for you to hoe. So this thing of God coming in and we all want the blessings of being in a favored position, but we don't realize being in that favored position thrust a mantle on us where it puts a requirement that God calls us now to go to back and forth between two worlds, to go into another place and bring heaven into this earth. It's what Jacob's ladder is all about. It's a gateway. It's not just about angels ascending and descending. It's about us ascending and descending. Us going into those deep places. Us going into the bedroom chamber. Us going into the place where God can sit and speak to us in intimacy and reveal His heart. Us entering into relationship with God. I love the story in Genesis when God's about to go and destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Y'all heard me mention this before. God is about to, He is with angels and He is about to go destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. He stops by Abraham's house and they fellowship. Abraham fixes them a meal, and God looks at these angels, and He says, how can I withhold this thing from my friend Abraham? I'm in such a level of relationship with him, I don't want to hold. I want to share my heart with him. I want him to know my heart. That's why the Word talks about David said he's a man after God's heart. The reason he was a man after God's heart is because God revealed his heart to David. David saw glimpses of the heart of Yahweh, and it transformed his heart. So God gives us these positions and these places of privilege and opportunity and revelation. But with that, I don't hold my kids accountable until they know better. But once they know better, then I hold them accountable. Brett, do you whip your kids for stuff they don't know better on? That'd be kind of cruel, wouldn't it? You know. If you just come in and just smack the mess out of Zealand and just beat the tar out of him and all that, and Zealand's like, what's that boy? I don't even know what I did. You know, I've seen people like that with dogs. They mean to dogs. You know, they just kicking their dog, and the dog don't even know what he done, you know. But I mean, that would be, you know, jacked up. So until we come into a place of understanding and knowing, we're not accountable. But boy, once we've tasted and seen and gone to the accountability, you know, You can't come back. You can't plead ignorance anymore, brother. You're past that point. You're past that point because of the stuff God's shown you. And so that's, I know I just spent 20 minutes on the first verse, but I want you to get that this isn't just a thing for spiritual hierarchy to go up into. God's favorite, but this is for all of us. Because you've seen it. You're exposed to it. You're exposed to it. The sheet's up now. You done seen everything. So you might as well, hey. Right? And so God sends all of these people. He sends these leaders in. Let's look at the verses in 16. These are the names. He just called out all the names. These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. Now he's coming in with detail. And he said to them, get you up this way southward, go up into the mountain, and see the land. What it is, the people that dwell therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds. And what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not. And be ye of good courage. Important statement right there. Be ye of good courage and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. Now I want to say something right here in these verses. He's telling them, he said, you go and you inspect the land and see what the land looks like to you. The word says, taste and see the Lord that he is good. You try this and taste it. All I ask, give God a genuine chance. Go deeper than giving church a chance or giving Sid and Lori a chance. Give God a chance. And when you give God a genuine chance and taste and see him, then you make up your mind and you know what you'll be. You're like, son. Once you genuinely, that's all I want. I want to, you know why I say that presence is the most important thing? Because once people experience presence and have genuine encounter with God, then it hooks them for everything else. And it ruins them for everything else. When we come in here, it's got to be about presence. If y'all come in here and y'all walk in these doors, you guys, y'all come in and y'all walk in these doors and you experience the presence of God, the peace of God, the hope of God, the love of God, that supersedes anything that comes out of this microphone. Supersedes any teaching that I can teach, no matter how well prepared I am or how good it might be, how insightful I might be, how nifty I might be with I come up with all of this cool stuff and all that stuff. If you don't have genuine encounter with him, then you might as well go to a self-help seminar. You know, something like that. But they came in and he said, here's what I want you to do. This is for you. This is not information for me. I want you to go and I want you to, God knew what the land looked like and he knew who dwelt there. And he says, I want you to go and I want you to spend time here. Here's the thing, guys. They spent 40 days. Now, how many of you know, would it really take 40 days to go in and to spy out some land and say whether it's good or bad? I think I could do a reconnaissance mission quicker than 40 days, don't y'all? But he wanted them to get a good feel of this. He wanted them to come in. You know what they were doing for 40 days? They were eating of the land. They weren't eating the parched corn. They were eating of the land. These 40 days they were in there. They were eating of the land. They were getting burnt. God wanted them to so experience the land and so experience him when they went into this. That the fear of that their hunger for the goodness and their belief in the goodness superseded their fear of the giants or what it was going to cost to get there. Here's the reality of this, and God wanted them to have a reality check. Y'all ever wondered why God didn't just carve out another Garden of Eden and let Israel go into that without conflict? When we go into these deep places with God, when we go into this promised land that he's got for us, it's going to cost us plenty. But God wants so much our desire for him, for his presence, for his revelation, for his peace, for His things. That's the biggest thing that at my bit, just right now in the last few weeks, especially, it is, I have been trying real hard to shut. I've been in absence of certain levels of peace in my life because I feel like my life's kind of in turmoil right now. I feel like I'm in a washing machine, and I'm like, man, I got to get some, you know, I just got to do this and get some peace. I've really been trying to pray peace because my mind's constantly going in different places on business and stuff like that. And I'm like, I've got to come into this place of, and what God wanted to do is for these spies that went in to spend enough time in there to thoroughly see all of this and say, you know what? I see there's giants right there. I see there's walled cities right there. I see there is a formidable, I don't want to say adversary, but there's formidable obstacles that I'm going to have to overcome. But the prize is worth it. The prize is worth it. You know why I believe Jesus spent 3.5 years on earth before He went to the cross? This is just my insight. You know why I believe He spent 3.5 years? I believe those 3.5 years, and I've said all of these things, and none of them are wrong, I don't feel like. I've said, well, Jesus came 3.5 years to show His disciples how to live. He spent 3.5 years to model it in front of us and all of this stuff. I believe God put Him. You notice that when God made Adam, He put him in the garden as a grown man. But when He sent Jesus, He sent him as a baby. And Jesus spent, I should have said, 33.5 years. The reason that I feel like God caused Jesus to walk on the earth for 33.5 years before Calvary's cross, I believe that Father God wanted to solidify in Jesus that the prize was worth it. He spent 33.5 years walking among humanity. 30 years in a place of obscurity, a place of hiding, a place of non-public ministry. Jesus wasn't doing all these miracles for the first 30 years. He was sitting among the people, observing the people. He was seeing the joy in God's creation, but He was also seeing the effects of the sin curse. And I believe that was His 40 days. I know He had 40 days of testing in the wilderness, but I believe His 33.5 years here was to solidify in Him that the prize is worth it. That when He went to the cross, it wasn't, well, I don't know about this thing. He'd seen what it was like for people to live in leprosy. He'd seen the stranglehold of religion. He saw the joys of mothers raising children. Saw the joy of childbirth in his own mother. He saw all of these things. He experienced all of these things. And I believe that God allowed Him to go through this process to solidify in Him that the prize is worth it. The longer we spend on this journey pressing into these deep places of God and experiencing these things of God and going over these mountains to get there, or moving these mountains to get there, you know what it does? It solidifies in us that the prize is worth it. The longer that we struggle with carnal things, it solidifies in me that the prize is worth it. Yes, and the risk is worth it. The prize is worth everything. It's worth the risk, it's worth the pain, it's worth the commitment, it's worth the time, it's worth all of these things. When you get that phone call or you see that person come to accept the Lord, genuinely come to accept the Lord. I'm not talking about getting weepy, I'm talking about life-changing, radical encounter with God that they say yes to. And I think that's one reason we go through this stuff. God allows us to go through this stuff. I think maybe that's one reason this thing still gives me heck sometimes. I can get frustrated. Now, my wife's been going through, you just have no idea where her back lately. She's going to Emory tomorrow. Talking about what can we do. And I believe in doctors. I believe in supernatural healing. I believe in doctors too. I'll take all of it. I'll say yes to all of it. But God could, as I prayed for her, I'm like, God, it's just a small thing. All you got to do is think it, and it happens. But I think part of our process is for us to come in and realize that the prize is worth it. Because one thing I found, nothing that is instant, it's not appreciated. It's not the depth of it isn't understood. That's why you got so many, and I'm not going to throw out names and all, and I'm not going to get into people's politics and causes and all of that stuff, but we are raising up generations, and I'm not going to throw it all on the younger generation. I'll say my generation too. We've got several generations of people now that I think really started in the 60s that are a bunch of punks that don't realize the cost of what we walk in as Americans. And so they don't respect the flag, and they don't respect the anthem, and they don't respect... Are there issues in our country? Yes, they are. But when you go out there, and some of these guys, and maybe some of you guys, I don't know if some of you guys have done some tours in Iraq or Afghanistan, and y'all bled with brothers, and y'all seen people fall beside you, and you've carried people off, and you personally know people. You go through the World War II and all of that stuff, and very rarely did you find a family in America that was not affected by a global fight for freedom. And when you go through stuff like that, you realize the prize is worth it. And God sent these spies in and said, I want you to go into this land, and I'm not going to bulldoze this land for you. I want you to go in this land. I want you to spend 40 days in this land. I want you to see the giants, the sons of Anak. I want you to see the walled cities. They saw Jericho. The walls were so thick, they raced chariots on top. And they're like, how are we going to conquer that? And God said, I want to stir in you so bad that the fruit looks so good that you'll say, I'll pay whatever price because I want my kids to grow up here. I want my kids to grow up here. I want my seed to walk. This is God's inheritance. And if this is where the ark's going to stay, it's worth any cost. And I'll be honest with you, we're a bunch of pansies. We want people to go. We want to throw money in the plate or send money into a ministry and want them to go and spend the 40 days in the promised land and bring the grapes back to us. And that's all. We say, yeah, bring them grapes. Here, I'll sow into your ministry and all. And we're a bunch of spiritual pansies. Because we have yet to determine in our heart if the prize is really worth it. When we get all discouraged and down, say, I've been serving the Lord faithful for 6 months. I don't care if it's 20 years. They spent 40 days in there. And they ate of the fruit. They saw the obstacles. They saw all of this. And they came back. And let me read this right quick. Am I good on time? I know we're not doing Bible study. I'm preaching. I'm sorry. I just lied. I'm really not sorry. I believe this stuff, guys. I believe God looks at me. I believe God whispers to me and He says, come up here. I believe God says, come here. I want to show you some stuff. I believe God gives me invitations. And it's not just when He wakes me up in the morning or the middle of the night. It's when He says, man, here's an opportunity for you to go see this and you go do that. And I want to say yes to the moment. And I believe this is for all of us. All of us. And he comes in right here. Verse 20. What the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood there or not, be of good courage. Be of good courage and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went and searched the land. Verse 22. They ascended. They did all of this. 23, they came unto the brook of Eshcol and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. The place was called the brook Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes from the children of Israel cut down from thence, and they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. It wasn't enough for them just to go in. God said, I want you to go in, but I want you to get the fruit of the land and bring it back to everybody else. Y'all remember the story of the siege of Samaria? It got so bad that they were cannibalizing their children. Everybody remember that? When God broke the siege and brought disarray into the enemy's camp, and the enemy began to engage upon themselves, and they fled and all of this stuff. Y'all remember who went into the enemy's camp first? The lepers. Y'all remember the story? The lepers. And out of the enemy went, the lepers went in, and they began to eat all the food, and they saw all of these tents, and I think it was the Assyrians, and they began to pile up the gold, and they're eating and all that. And then they looked at the city, and they saw the city that was shut up because of a siege. They saw a city where people had been selling dove poop for real money because that was the only thing you could eat. Anybody want to make it off chicken poop? That's a bad way, isn't it, Terry? So bad, mamas were cannibalizing their kids. That's the reality. Mamas were cannibalizing their kids, and they're sitting out here, and they are enjoying the spoils of God's victory. And what did they say? What are we doing? If we don't go and share with the city, with the inhabitants, with the people of what God has done and the bounty from what God has done, then what kind of curse is going to be upon us? Who had more responsibility in that moment than anybody else? The guys that were sitting in the enemy's camp enjoying the spoils. They were lepers, but they had more responsibility. They were the downtrodden, but they had more responsibility on them, more God recognized God responsibility on them than anybody else in the whole country of Samaria at this time. The whole region of Samaria. More responsibility on them. When God carries you to these places, guess who has more responsibility than anybody? God gives you insight. No, revelation. When God gives you revelation and God carries you to these intimate places, you have more responsibility than any TV preacher, than anybody in Victory Fellowship. The other day when you gave that word a few Sundays ago, that specific word of knowledge that you gave a few weeks ago, you had more responsibility on you than any minister in this house because God whispered a specific word to you. And you were just like the lepers that were sitting out there. And these children, these 12 spies went into the land. And God said, see the land, taste the land, live off the land for 40 days and all of that stuff. And I'm going to stir in you and I'm going to do stuff. But at the end of that, He said, now go back to the people and carry evidence. Not just word, but physical evidence. And getting back to where I started, what God told me, He said the one of the biggest things that is lacking in us right now, Brett, is that we are not going into these places and bringing fruit back for people to see. We're not going into the deep places of God and experiencing these deep and powerful things and these moving things and these intimate things and then bringing it back and sharing that fruit with the people that will change their life. I need to come in and be so passionate and so on fire and so moved by what God's doing that if we have an FCA event at our house, every one of those kids can feel that. They can feel that there's something different about this place and there's something different about this couple that lives here. And there's something, that's why Nick's making an impact right now, because they're feeling something different about him. That's why Jessica and Lisa, something kind of, I don't know why it took so long for this to hit me upside the head. Have y'all been hearing the praise reports about, I'm not running a rabbit, this is tying in this. Y'all been hearing about the praise reports about the FCA and the three local schools lately? Lisa had like 77 the other day and they had 10 last year, 12 last year on a good week. Jessica, y'all had, what, about nearly 100 over 100 now. Nick was at 100 last week. Man, you're talking about between three schools, you got 300 kids in FCA. Guess where the leaders of those FCAs go to church at? Little old bitty 200-person Victory Fellowship Church. Can anybody say mantle of responsibility? Can anybody say who has given much, much is required? God threw a mantle on you just because of the presence that you sit in this place every week. There's a level of responsibility and accountability. And if you don't carry that and don't share that with those kids, I made a statement. I don't know if you were here or not, but I made a statement a few weeks ago. I can think about my entire school career, and I spent, counting kindergarten, I spent 16 years in school. I didn't fail three times. I got 3 years of college under my belt. 16 years of school under that. I cannot name a single teacher that had a spiritual impact in my life. I had some good teachers. I had some teachers that cared about their students. I had some teachers that were probably good Christians and went to church, but not one teacher in 16 years had any spiritual impact in my life. How many can you name, Brett? You got a responsibility. You got a mantle that's thrown on you, and it goes beyond even being a teacher. God puts you in a place of authority over FCA. And all of a sudden, you don't have 20 sheep. Last time I went to FCA at Bremen, and it was a year before last time I went to FCA at Bremen, it was doing pretty good, but there probably wasn't 35 kids there. You had 100 kids. All of a sudden, whoosh. You know what the mandate is on you now? Take them grapes. Don't just give them a Chick-fil-A biscuit. Take them grapes of Eshkol. Take them supernatural fruit. But here's the thing, is you can't give them supernatural fruit if you don't go there and get it yourself. You're the only one here. I'm sorry. It's not enough. I know every time y'all have a meeting, you're thinking, who's somebody cool I can get to come and speak to the kids that they might respond to? You know what they'll do? They'll forget about every speaker that you bring in. But you know who they won't forget about? Miss Labby. Jeremy come in and he can bring a good word and it can inspire the kids and motivate them and they'll be like, oh man, that's good. Jameis Winston gave a halftime. I don't like Florida State. I mean, I'm indifferent about Florida State. I don't care about Florida State. I mean, they're ACC. It doesn't matter. He could come in and he gave a halftime speech and got the guys supposedly fired up the other night and all of that. But you know who they're really going to respond to? Jimbo. Because he's the man that's there with them every day. He's the guy that's bringing them grapes. It's good. Yeah, bring that in. But you know what's really going to impact them? Miss Labby. That's the one that's bringing the grapes of Eshkol. That's the one they're going to see supernatural fruit in. Because they don't know about this cat. You can get Brett, he's cool and all that. You can get him come speak and all that stuff. But they don't know about this cat. But you're the one that lives with them. You're the one that dwells with them. You're the one that's one of them that comes in. And you come back and you say, this is supernatural fruit. And you know what? All of a sudden it matters. Because Miss Labby said it's supernatural fruit. Because you're not the preacher that gets paid to do that and say that. You're one of them and you say, guys, there's supernatural fruit. And here's evidence of it. But the responsibility on you is to go get it. To go to those deep spiritual places. To go to those places of intimacy. Go to those places where you hear the whispers of God. Go to the places where you know what. Our biggest challenge right now is to God's, that river is flowing and moving, and our biggest challenge right now is to see the direction of this thing and how it's flowing and the turns that it's taking and for us to flow in that river. That's our big thing. Not, you know, I said something Sunday, Jeremy. I said, what we try to do is we come in and we do our agenda and then ask God to bless it. We beg God to bless our agenda. God, this is what I'm going to do and this is the life I'm going to live and these are the choices that I'm going to make and now I'm going to beg you to bless this thing. I'm even jacked up in my prayers. When I'm praying for you guys in the mornings, you know what I pray for y'all? God bless them. God do this. And just, you know, bless. I pray for y'all too. I pray for your marriage. I pray for your finances. I pray for your kids. I pray for Isaac and Zyler and all of that stuff. You know what I really need to be? I need to shift this thing instead of say, God bless what they're doing. I really need to come in and say, God, let them get perfectly lined up with you so that they're flowing in your river. And in that is naturally going to come blessings. Instead of throw blessings on what they're doing. God, let them get such a place where they are coming and going on Jacob's ladder. And they're ascending into heaven and they're bringing grapes down. And their sons see the grapes. You know what's sad to me? Most revivals in churches start with the youth, don't they? You let some kids get on fire and everybody gets, woohoo! It's sad when our 15-year-olds are going up and they're bringing grapes of Eshkol back because we're too passive to go get them. ourselves. Amen? That's it. That's right, isn't it? What time is it, somebody? 5 till? 3 till? We'll combine that. It's 8 till. All right. Verse 26, they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and showed unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. Showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came unto the land whither thou sentest, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. This is it. I'm going to bring it back, and I'm going to show you, and I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to tell you how good God is, and I'm going to tell you how powerful, I'm going to tell you how loving He is, I'm going to tell you how amazing His presence is. I'm going to tell you what it can bring into your life. I'm going to tell you the peace it can bring, and the hope it can bring, and the joy it can bring, and all of these things. It can be overwhelming in your life, and it all comes from being in relationship with Him. I'm going to tell you there's places that we can go that we're not walking in right now, and God wants us to go there. I'm going to tell you so many things. I want to spend so many, not tales, but true stories about the goodness of God and the presence of God and the amazing stuff of God to where it makes you want to go there. I want my kids to want to go there. How many of y'all, somebody come back from a mission trip? I mean, we came back from Guatemala and just had an amazing, amazing, amazing trip. And we came back from Guatemala, and boy, we were just like, we were gushing, weren't we? I mean, it was almost sickening. You got tired of hearing. I'm like, I'm tired of hearing about this and all that stuff. It was good, though. Still think about it. But we ought to come back and tell such tales, true tales, accurate tales. You know what amazes me? I can take my phone right here, and I can go to my camera roll, and I can get on the right subject. And you know what I can do? I can flip you, and I can show you pictures of my grandkids and my children. And there's a baptism in the Pacific Ocean. A bunch of people got baptized right after Azusa. And of course, I got a bunch of pictures of deer and ducks and stuff like that on here and all of that. And we'll document all that stuff. And you know why we keep that stuff on there? So we can show somebody. Why y'all put stuff on Facebook? That's why you put stuff on Facebook. You want your friends to know what's happening in your life, don't you? Isn't that why you do it? It's not your bragging board, is it? It's relaxing. I'm not picking on you, but we do that because same reason I got stuff on here. If I am in the right conversation and we get talking about deer hunting, you know what I'll do? I'll say, hey, man, let me show you all that 10-pointer I killed this year. You know what that is? That's a limit of ducks. That's a limit of mallards in Arkansas in January of this year. You know, I get in the right conversation, I'll start whipping that stuff out. That's my wife with a bunch of ducks she shot. You know, I can brag on my wife. Y'all can show y'all's wife. I can show my wife in the duck blind with waders on, you know, and see them and killing stuff. Shoot them. But here's my thing, guys, is we will come from all of our little stuff. Some of y'all, and there's a lot of reasons I don't do Facebook, but some of y'all have a hard time enjoying vacation from putting so many pictures on Facebook showing everybody what a good time you having on vacation. But we ain't brought the first grape of Eshkol back from having a wild encounter with God, have we? I don't want to seem like a see what I'm saying? We will share with what we're passionate about. You know the reason that we're not passionate about? Kingdom stuff. Because we hadn't experienced enough of it. When we are start experiencing more of it, you know what we'll do? We'll try to get somebody else turned on to it. Did y'all hear that? She said, we see little because we believe little, and we believe little because we see little. Here's the question for you. Here's the question for all of us. And I could go to Matthew. If we had time, I'd go to Matthew 8. And basically what happens in Matthew 8 is it says that one of Jesus' disciples, not one of his 12 main disciples, but one of Jesus had many disciples that followed his teaching and casually followed him around like the American church. And one of them came to him. And Jesus gave him an invitation. He says, follow me and I'll make you my disciple. I mean, Jesus was an invitation to a higher level. And you know what the guy said? He said, let me go bury my daddy first. And you know what he was saying? It wasn't that his daddy was dead in the casket. We got to go do the funeral. He said, my daddy's an older guy. Let me go let him finish out his life and let me take care of helping him finish his life. And when I'm done in a more convenient season, when it's a more convenient season, guess what? There never is one. Yes, ma'am.
In Sydney telling this story, it ends up the spies, there's only two that come back and say, we can conquer this land. And all he's talking on tonight, I kept hearing it costs to go and conquer the land. It costs you something. And God kept bringing my mind. I've got a friend from Texas. They've got four daughters, ages 23 to like 15. And I've been with her since they were all born, so I know them all very well. And they're beautiful, beautiful daughters. And sometimes I think Bruce and Jen, they're in Texas now planting a church in Dallas. I think they've set this remarkably high standard for their girls that not only are they going to be pure when they married, that's going to be their first kiss at their wedding altar. Now, I'm talking, the one daughter just turned 21, and I mean, she is model beautiful. I mean, they're all beautiful, but Ashley is model beautiful. And she was telling her younger daughter, who may not always aspire to hit that level, do you not think I've wanted to kiss guys before? I have. But I'm waiting because I know this is what God has put, and I'm not putting it on everybody else, but this is what God has put on our family. The oldest daughter, Catherine, spent the year in Thailand. She's a Florida Atlantic University president of the campus. And this spring, she'll tell you, she said, this spring she had this guy pursuing her, and she really, really liked him. He's really, really cute. And she gave up her first kiss to him at 23. And she said, and a week later, I knew, God said, he wasn't the one. He's good, but he wasn't the one. And so she broke it off with him, and she spent the summer in Thailand. She's doing ambassador stuff. This is not Christian organization she's with. She's just with her being president. I'm telling this long story to get you somewhere. She's in Thailand being ambassador for the United States is what she's over there with as a student ambassador. And she's been planning the whole summer. It's on her to plan this event in Vietnam. She's in Thailand. She's planning an event in Vietnam. She goes to the airport, and she picks this guy up. And God said, he's supposed to speak tonight. She didn't know if he's Christian. She didn't know. And she had a word for him. She hears things. She hears God clearly. And she had a word of prophecy for him. Well, this guy from Texas A&M turns around and gives her a word. He is a Christian. And she goes back to her room. And God said, look, and you remember what it's in your suitcase. 2 weeks before, when she was shopping for her dad, she's walking through a store. And she buys a mug. And God said, buy that red tie. She said, that's for your future husband. Buy the red tie is for your future husband. She said, I don't have the money, and I'm not listening to this today, and I want a red tie. And she starts to walk out, and God said, I said, go back and get the red tie. So this guy's from Texas A&M. He's supposed to speak that night, and he comes up to her, and he said, they told me I'm supposed to speak that, but I can't unless I have a red tie. And I don't have a red tie. She said, well, guess what? I do. Now, she still has not told him anything. He's a Christian from Texas A&M. He's in graduate school. And they talk for the next 48 hours before they have to go back home. He's going back to the States. She's going back to Thailand. He said, I'm pursuing a girl back in Texas A&M. She said, that's fine. Go ahead. When he got home, the girl wouldn't talk to him. The girl wouldn't give him the time of day. And from that point, for the last month, they've been texting, and she's planning now to try to go to Texas A&M for her graduate school. She feels like she still has not revealed to him the red tie story that you are my husband. She said he just doesn't know it yet. But she has waited this time. He's 6'2", he's handsome, and he's a sold-out Christian who hears like she hears. And what did it cost her? Has it cost Ashley? Ashley's 21. She's like, Lord, y'all please find me a husband. She's ready. But she said, it's going to be worth it. It has cost us something to go back and get those grapes. But the prize that we have before us is worth it. It's worth what you guys are going through right now. The struggles and the battles. God says, hang on. I've got something for you. If you'll hang on to that. Amen.
Let's stand to our feet. Amen. I'm glad you shared that. I didn't know if I'd have liberty to or not, so I didn't. So that ain't on me. You want God to speak like that to you? Call something. It changed your life. It cost you something. It changed somebody else's life. That's what the world needs. They need their red tie story. That's what they need. You need your red tie story. We all do. The way we get that is going to those places. It's going to those places. It's what our church needs. They need better preaching. They need better singing. It's always nice. But it needs grapes of Eshkol. It needs grapes of Eshkol. Your kids grew up with good preaching and good singing. They need the grapes of Eshkol. My grandchildren, they've grown up listening to me preach their whole life. They need the grapes of Eshkol. That's what's going to come in. The stuff that comes from thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as in heaven. That's how it gets here. That's how it gets here. That's how it gets here. Jeffrey, will you start some worship music? If you want to... If you want to start hearing God clear, if you want to start seeing God clear, it's available for you. But it costs something. It costs something. It costs something. Maybe it's hanging out with somebody that's been there before. How many of the younger people that eventually inherited the land gravitated toward Joshua and Caleb and said, tell me again about this land. Tell me again about it. How many times do you think they told the stories of their 40 days in the promised land? Of the grapes that maybe these kids didn't see but they heard about. They said, tell me about those grapes. Call something. Call something. Red tie costs something. But look at the fruit. Purpose in your heart. And say, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. That's what I want to experience. That's what I want to experience. That's what I want to bring to earth. It's what she needs. Even more so than a good loving home. There's kids on every corner that grew up in a good loving home and they're dying and going to hell. Not having an impact on the world in the world. Grapes of Eshkol. So just purpose in your heart. Purpose in your heart. And go for it. Go for it. Go for it. Let's just come spend some time in the altar if you want to come and take communion. We did that Sunday as a body, and it was so powerful. Say, God, I want to hear you better. God, I want to see more. I want to hear your voice clearly.